Let me share with you some of my most favorite slides. They're not in your book. I'll be happy to email them to you. This is a normal aorta. The aorta is the large artery that first comes off the heart. The vessels that your sister is suffering from now, Jane, are the tiny capillaries that feed the heart muscle that surround the heart itself. This is the big muscle that comes off the heart, the aorta. Notice how nice and smooth and pink it is. These little tiny holes are the arteries or the arterioles that leave the aorta to feed the lungs and the tissues, or the organs around the heart. Okay, that's nice and healthy and normal. This is not so normal, but it's not really bad either. It's got some aorta. It's an aorta with some accumulation of atheromatous material. Atheromatous means the beginning deposits of some hard, soft material. And you get this artery here that's nice and soft, and you get some crystalline formations here. You get some cholesterol deposits, other fatty deposits, and the calcium is pushed in there by the immune system to kind of help surround and heal that. It's not quite as flexible as it should be, but it's not significant disease. You might get a small elevation in blood pressure as a result of that. This one is a little bit more severe. You can see some elevated yellow streaks, and there's some definite stiffness beginning to occur here. This sort of artery is not as flexible as it should be. Our arteries should expand and contract, all that, just like an elastic that never wears out, should expand and contract. Unfortunately, over time, we can no longer expand and contract, and it gets a little stiff. That's when the blood pressure starts going up. Okay, one reason why blood pressure can go up. Liken this to a piece of lasagna noodle, okay? And a cooked lasagna, you can just slice through with a knife, just nice and click, nice and swift and easy. That's the way an artery should be as well when we're on the autopsy table. I've done two autopsies and in my training, and you know, you want it to be nice and smooth and slippery. Okay, this artery is a little stiff. You actually cut through this with a pair of scissors, and it's soft here, and then it's a little crunchy over here because of the cholesterol deposits and the calcium deposits as the immune system tries to surround that inflammation. Where it is stiff, and that stiff needs to interact with the soft, you get some tension that develops. You remember that artery is always going to expand and contract, because every time the heart pushes or contracts, it's pushing blood, and that's when you want to expand. And then between beats, you want it to contract. So where you've got this tension between this hard, soft, this soft and hard tissue, you can have some micro tears, and some hemorrhaging can begin to occur, and some minor hemorrhaging. Again, isn't so bad. Now, this is aorta with raised yellow and white plaques. And this isn't very good at all. You know, this is getting close to end of life stage kind of things going on. And you can definitely see here some soft, some hard. And where you've got the interaction here, you've got an ulceration occurring, an inflammation occurring. And this is what we call some inflammatory kind of heart disease. This is not the blockage that your sister is seeing right now. Now, the next one is kind of gruesome, so I'm not going to leave it there very long. It's called ulcerative atheromatous atherosclerosis. That's what it looks like. I call it pepperoni pizza heart disease. Now, I've purposely imprinted upon you a very evil thing. I've purposely imprinted upon you what end-stage ulcerative atheromatous atherosclerosis looks like. I just call it pepperoni pizza heart disease. Hopefully, next time you're tempted to have pepperoni pizza with extra cheese, I want you to remember Dr. McLean's pepperoni pizza heart disease. This is when Dr. Carol Small was the anatomy professor at Loma Linda. He's since passed away. I became friends with him, and he allowed me to go in and take 450 pictures of different organs and organ systems. And I found slides that he'd already taken. He allowed me to duplicate a number of slides. And I've used these in my presentations over the years. This is the exact same pictures that many cardiologists use in their explanation to their patients when they're explaining inflammatory ulcerative atheromatous atherosclerosis. We just call it inflammatory heart disease, which is not what your sister is having, Jean. I want to make that perfectly clear. About 30% of the people will have inflammatory heart disease. The other 70% will have the kind of heart disease that Jean's sister is suffering from right now. When those arteries can block, they can block because of constriction, or they can block because of deposits. It may not be inflammatory. Okay? You want to have another look at a pepperoni pizza heart disease? See, I'll step away and let you have a good look at it. Okay. That's not good. All right. Any questions that might have been generated as a result of these gruesome... No. They're struggling. All of that is reversible if it's caught early enough. Sometimes it's reversible by cleaning out the arteries, putting in stents to open up the arteries, or replacing arteries with grafts from the leg veins. Okay? There will be scarring left. So this is reversible. That end stage one, and not so much. Okay? But this one and all of these are still reversible. There will be scarring, so you'll never get back to that youthful flexibility in the arteries that you could have, but you can prevent it from going down to the end stage if you got involved in the program soon enough. Okay? These are definitely surgical candidates, but we know the signs and symptoms to prevent to get to this level. There's inflammatory markers in your bloodstream that the physicians can analyze. There's blood tests called cholesterol and HDL and LDL and triglyceride and glucose. There's blood pressure. All of these things are indicative of what stage you are progressing along. Okay? This is inflammatory. Only 30% of heart disease is inflammatory. The other 70% are the blockages. But when they're combined together, that's really the silver bullet. Okay, does that raise any more questions? Okay, I'd like to go through your manual, just to emphasize a couple things in section one. I'd like you to go to section one and turn to the fifth or sixth page, looking for this, total health and spiritual health. I mostly just want to make you aware of that, because when you're thinking about this in the context of health ministry, it's important not to forget about spiritual health or mental health or social health. Oftentimes we just deal with physical health. Okay? Don't be afraid to engage your patients or your participants in all aspects. And you might want to bring in other specialists. You know, we don't have a whole lot of slides on spiritual health or mental health. You might want to bring in somebody else to have a 4 or 6 week series on stress management. Skip McCarthy has an excellent program on stress management. It's a 16-hour program. It's a spiritual approach to stress management. He used to be a pastor at Pioneer Memorial Church. I'm not sure where he's at anymore. Does anybody know? He retired? Anyways, it's an excellent stress management program from a spiritual point of view. It's Pastor Skip McCarthy, and I can't remember the name of his program, but it's a stress management series. Is it Stress the Way Out? Is something like that? I can't remember. Yes,
it's really good.
I've used it myself. I've used it 10 years ago. Stress Beyond Coping. That's it. Thank you, Vivian. You know, that's pretty awesome for an 81-year-old woman. Isn't that something? I'm struggling over the name, and I'm 20 years younger than her. That's almost embarrassing. Thank you, Vivian. Stress Beyond Coping. I saw Pastor McCarthy. I think 2 years ago, and he gave me the latest updated CD since I purchased his full program a decade earlier. So he's updating the material. In fact, he's working with his daughter, is a clinical psychologist, I believe. I think she graduated from Loma Linda, I'm not sure. But together they worked it up, and they've really made it an evidence-based psychological and spiritual program. I would not be embarrassed to share it in our churches. If you share it corporately, you want to make sure they understand it's a spiritual program, okay? Because it definitely is. It's not in, we don't sell it, but Pastor Skip McCarthy does. You'll have to reach him. He often teaches at this seminar, at this health ministry. He's not here this year that I've noticed. And you know, some of us don't come. We've been here every year, but not everybody comes every year. So you could reach him, do an internet search, and you'll find him. Or send me an email, and I'll try and figure out his address. So there's some information there on spiritual health. On the next page, wellness pyramid. And I would really purposefully have programs that deal with all of those issues in that pyramid. Our programs will focus on prevention and in control and weight and rest, physical activity, and diet. We don't purposely look at environment. There might be something you could bring in. Community, spiritual. So, you know, I would encourage your church to put together a budget, and every year you buy additional programs. And then you do a variety. I think 8 weeks to wellness is an excellent introductory to everything, and I would always do that, but I would encourage you to add more. And if you've got a population that needs some specific help on diabetes or blood pressure, we've got some excellent programs over there on diabetes and blood pressure, but there's others too. The Diabetes Mastery, I don't think they're doing it this year. Are they here? Diabetes Mastery is a good program, but it's more a medical program, okay? Then there's a little brochure here you could hand out on 10 steps to optimum health. I've talked about the health principles. Now let's go over here on the behavior change, the health ministry cycle. I want to spend a few more moments on that, just two or three pages farther. The health ministry cycle looks like this. Okay, I want you to look there at stages of change. Number one, pre-contemplation. Somebody read to me the kinds of things that are described there of a person who's in pre-contemplation. Okay. What sort of strategies could you try then for someone who doesn't know they need your help? There's some examples there. Yeah, you're just throwing information out there. Bulletin inserts, health nuggets. Some of these self-assessments that we have, we've got close to 15 different health assessments that you throw out there. You want to increase awareness. Health fairs. You know they've got a need, but they don't know they've got a need. So you need to be thinking about, what do you need to do to create a need? You've got a lot of folks traveling all over the world, and they're doing wonderful ministry. But they still need to do all this stuff. How do we motivate them to get exercise in foreign countries where it may not be safe to do so? These are challenges that your folks have to deal with as they go around. Same with food. Food is a comfort. Oh, it's a wonderful comfort. And when you're traveling, you're lonely. It's a foreign country. Some of our leaders in our church travel well over 200 days a year, if not 300 days a year. I don't know what your average is, but it's a tremendous challenge. Okay? And so there's international companies that do the same thing, and they embark on some pretty powerful incentives to stay healthy. But we have budgetary concerns. You can't do that. So it's a challenge, I know. So contemplation. You've been thinking about making a change, but how do you push them over the edge to take action? What are some strategies here? Excellent. Some testimonies. Some sort of evangelist who's not you. Okay? And that's part of preparation as well. Talk to other people who've made changes successfully. Then taking action. You know, pretty much everything we've designed is in the taking action phase. And I got to tell you, we're working with corporations now who want to identify their population who are smokers and who want to change versus who are smokers and don't want to change. We know who those people are when they fill out our assessment. The way they answer the questions, we know whether they're in pre-contemplation or in action. And it's a different program to convince a smoker to stop smoking when they're in pre-contemplation versus action. You don't want to spend the money for an action program for someone who's just contemplating or pre-contemplating, because you'll waste your money. So you can do targeted interventions when you analyze the assessments and understand what they're asking. Okay? Don't forget about number 5, maintenance. You should not just do the program and walk away. This is where I've encouraged churches, is once we've done a health fair and a health emphasis weekend, then you do a series of meetings like 8 weeks to wellness. Then do a series of follow-up meetings like once a month or once a quarter. And maybe you've started a vegetarian fiesta like Pastor Carter did. A number of the churches I've worked with have. And maybe then, rather than do it once a quarter, it takes a lot of effort. You know, it takes one person in the kitchen for every 10 people in the audience. You need cooks, you need delivery persons, and you need cleanup persons, you need dishwashers. So you need a minimum of one person in the kitchen for every 10 people in the audience to do it well. And everything starts out with a minimum of 3. You should never do a cooking school without at least 3 people. Okay? And one should be the cook, one should be the cleanup and in person, and then the other is to do whatever else the cook needs you to do. Okay? You need multiple hands. And those of you that are shaking your heads, you know what I'm talking about. Yes?
One church, and I guess it's Sabbath in Tennessee, has a big fiesta every year.
Uh-huh.
Diane Fleming was the speaker last lesson. Get the youth involved.
Cool. That's a great idea. In Oregon, every year we have Veg Fest. It's called Northwest or NW Veg Fest. It is not sponsored by any Adventist organization, although our local Adventist hospital always has a one-day Friday series of meetings prior to the Saturday and Sunday weekend meetings in the Portland Convention Center. And I usually attend that on Sundays and on Fridays, and there's lots of people there. There's hundreds of people there that have come to learn about being a vegetarian. And our Adventist hospital and a number of our churches always have booths at that. And then we have internationally acclaimed speakers Neil Barnard, some of the dietitians, many famous speakers come, and they're presenting to the general public, which is free throughout the whole day, all this information that we know and take for granted so much. Okay, so don't forget about maintenance. Your participants need to be followed up. They don't all embrace the program with gusto like you do. They need their hands held. They need support. And it's also good for you to get reinforcement periodically as well. So once a quarter or once a month, having a veg fest or a follow-up of some kind is really a good idea. In Singapore, we had a wonderful, all the people who came through my New Start live-in program, we invited them back to the outpatient program. And then not every day, I forget now what I did it. Was it Monday, Wednesday, and Friday? And then sometimes it was just once a week. I would meet at the Botanical Gardens, and we'd all exercise together. At sometime was in the morning, sometime was afternoon. I let the participants choose when they wanted to meet. Then we meet regularly for once a week. And then we always met as an exercise outing. And then when we're exercising, they're always asking me questions. So it's like a doctor's visit, but it's not. You know, it's one of those sidewalk consults that sometimes don't mean anything. But it's important for the interaction and the interchange that we can maintain. Some of your people are going to relapse. Don't forget number 6. They're going to fall back. You don't want to kick them out of your fellowship. You want to welcome them back in, hold their hand, and let's get started again when they're ready. They may have to go through the whole process again from pre-contemplation to contemplation to taking action, and just follow them through. Then when you know they're on the program and are going to stick with the program, then they're the ones you need to use to help evangelize and bring other folks in. Let them be some of your great marketing professionals. So the next page, we're in this cycle all the time, okay? We're in this cycle all the time. Change and follow-up and awareness, assessment, education, we're in this cycle all the time. And you want to be continuing to provide opportunities. Even though you've got some experienced partners, you're going to have some newbies coming in all the time. So this is a continual process. I've written an annual health outreach model that I'm not sure is in this, but we had hundreds to hand out in our booth there. There's, if not, you can get one from Catherine, or I can email one to you. It's an annual health outreach model that I wrote. It's a one-page summary of what you can do throughout the year, and then just repeat the cycle every year by adding in new topics, bringing in new experts. And sometimes, you know, you're the expert, but you may not be appreciated as much in your church as if you were to invite me or somebody else to come in. And you're welcome to do that. We often engage various churches. I visited 44 countries doing seminars, and it's fun to do. It's just expensive because there's airfare and travel and all that stuff. And I know it's not cheap for you to invite us to do that. But we'd be happy to engage periodically to come and help you with your health ministry. But if you're going to invite me and my wife to come, and by the way, I don't travel anymore without my wife, so you got to figure that into the transportation expenses. But you need to figure out a health emphasis weekend and make it a big deal. And, you know, this, I don't need the recognition, but you need the recognition. So if you can use my professional expertise to come in and help you in your health ministry and follow up with a health fair and do some seminars for your community and church, we'd love to do it. I've done this in Trinidad, in Bahamas, Jamaica 4 times. Actually, the non-Adventist people invited me back to Jamaica more than all the Adventists have. Isn't that exciting? There's a Methodist lady in Jamaica that heard us speak at this seminar. She just found it on the internet, and she keeps inviting us back to Jamaica to do seminars because she has a passion for providing health ministry to her Jamaican and Trinidadian folks. She knows a little bit about the Adventist church, but not much. So once the Adventists heard that I was coming back, they finally invited me once. Yes.
Do you have a Spanish speaker in your
team? We do not, unfortunately. I wish we did, but I've done this seminar many times for Spanish folks, for Japanese, Korean, and others, and they just translate for me. Yeah, they just interpret for me. It takes longer, but if you need me as a professional to come and assist you, my wife and I'd be happy to do that. It's just not cheap to do that. Travel is what it is. Okay, let's see, where are we? So, under planning your health ministry, you've got a great idea now that you're leaving here. You may have to form a committee back at your church. You may have to convince your pastor to do this. If you can't, give me a call. I'll give him a call. We'll have a chat. All pastors should embrace this with a passion. Okay? You've got the Bible on your side. You've got Ellen White on your side. But sometimes the pastors get involved and it divides the church. And that's a problem. Pastors don't want to divide the church. So don't be judgmental. Be happy. Be friendly. Share the science. Don't share the fanaticism. So put together a process on page 4 there. Plan with some people. It'd be a good idea to put together a committee and get board approval. Get your pastor to agree. You might want to get your pastor to come in and offer a spiritual nugget later in the program, not right at the beginning. You might scare some people away. You might want to analyze the data that you can collect. When you do some of these self-scored assessments, you might want to figure out, do you have a high diabetic risk in your population? Do you have a high blood pressure risk? Do you have a high overweight risk? Yes?
I wanted to ask on the...
The only ones that do are the only ones that do an aggregate compilation are the computer scored ones. So the your health age, your stress, and your coronary risk all have a brief data sheet that you can look at. Okay? There are surveys that you can purchase from various organizations that are hand-scored. Ours are hand-scored or computerized scored. You can look at the population data from the census to get some idea of what the diseases are in your area. You can go visit your vital statistics area of your local health department for a particular county or a particular city. You can find out all this information. And if you can find out that, you've got higher populations of diabetes or hypertension in certain areas, then you can address that area with certain kinds of programs. Yes? I have an annual health outreach model you can get from Catherine. It's just a single piece of paper that gives you an example of what you can do throughout the year. You want a plan to be permanent? This isn't a hit-and-miss thing. I get really concerned about some of our wonderful annual mission trips that we make, and we never go back. And what good is that? You set up some screening, some assessments and expectations, and then you don't bring in and keep something that's permanent there. So if you're going to go to some island in the way South Pacific because they've got poor medical care and you want to do a health outreach, you better not go unless you're planning on developing a medical clinic or a hospital or something to create some sense of permanence. Okay, does that make sense? I visited the island of Chuuk It was called Truk Lagoon years ago, and now it's called Chuuk. And I've been there a number of times. They got a wonderful hospital, but they never put together the infrastructure to maintain the hospital. They got a wonderful laboratory, but they don't have the infrastructure there to maintain the reagents you need to run the machines to make an effective laboratory. We had patients come to us from Guam, or from Chuuk, when I was in Guam. We had patients come to us that these dear ladies would have blood sugars of 550 or 600. They'd be pregnant, and the babies would be dead. And she might have had 15 pregnancies, but only had 3 living children because of out-of-control diabetes. We'd get them controlled. We'd teach them how to keep it controlled. We'd give them the insulin and the needles and for a 3-month supply. But at the end of 3 months, she's cured. Until she's no longer cured a few months later, and she's now full-blown diabetic, and she may get pregnant again, and the baby will probably die because the hospital doesn't have the infrastructure in place. We have taught many of these, but unfortunately the leaders have gone and spent the money and bought houses in Switzerland, and they haven't built up the infrastructure to maintain the care that we've given to them for free. It's a real tragedy. So on your mission trips, plan for permanence, not just a one-time event. And when you do these in your community, plan to stay there. You live there. You're a member. This isn't a one-time event. Once you're done with working with your population, evaluate. Ask them questions. How did you do? Did you learn anything? What could you have done better? What could you have done differently? Ask your population, do you have members in your community that you know that you could bring back next time? You might have 20 or 30 people come to a seminar. They might bring 2 or 3, so next time you might have 100 people. You got to plan for it, prepare for it. That's a good thing. Yes. I've not done this program specifically on the radio. I've been on the radio a number of times in a number of countries. And in Guam, I had an 8-minute spot that was aired 7 times, 2 days. And I talk about all these principles, but not specifically 8 weeks of wellness. But I think that's a great idea. If you've got access to a radio, outstanding. They're not going to listen to it for 2 hours or for an hour, but you can create some 10 or 15 minute segments. That's a great idea if you've got access to a radio. TV even. Cable TV. Lots of cable TVs in many, many countries are looking for content. And they would be happy to film you for free if you just show up and make the presentation. Kind of makes you nervous, doesn't it, to be on the TV? But don't worry about it. It's a great idea. Great idea. Okay, I want to review this number 2 again. I kind of went over it a little fast. Keep flipping the page. What sort of activities can you do? You see, when you've got critical and disease there, you got emergencies. It's in section 1. It's the last page in section 1. Okay? We've got excellent emergency rooms and hospitals and physicians and nurses, good medical care. But we need to be doing over there in lifestyle and preclinical. This is lifestyle assessment, awareness, education. This is what health ministry can do in this area. It's a lot cheaper to do it here than it is to do ER and hospital. But we need ERs and hospitals. We need doctor's offices and nurses. Okay? Because not everybody's going to want to change. Not everybody is ready to take action. In your area, you might want to find somebody who's elderly and has made the right decisions and interview them and put them on the radio or put them on the TV. Okay? There was a lady in Michigan that had ridden her bicycle across, or had she run? What was her name? I mentioned Mavis Lindgren yesterday. We had Holder Crooks, a research assistant at Loma Linda University. Holder Crooks was a physician's widow, and she volunteered to work with Dr. Harding. And she was the oldest lady to climb Mount Whitney, and she's the oldest lady to ever climb Mount Fuji in Japan at the time. And I remember Holder, she'd be jogging slowly around Loma Linda with cans of food in her backpack to give her weight. And then she would just walk up Mount Whitney. She would never stop. And the young students that she'd be with, not all of them could even keep up with her. And she would just plod along and get all the way up there. Well, because she prepared for it back at sea level. So you might want to find those champions in your area. Invite them, interview them, bring them to your class, show them off. They'd love to show themselves off. Do you have a need to work with your children in your community? You know, all the programs we've designed are for adults. There's a number of other good professionals that have designed very good programs for children. And don't forget, that's a market that you can use as well. That Super Size Me TV program is an excellent program. By the way, you can purchase an edition that doesn't have swear words in it. I forget what it's called, but Super Size Me for Kids, there's two of them out. There's one with lots of cussing and swearing in. There's another one that's got an abridged version without the swearing. You can purchase that one. And then Florida Hospital has put together a very good program on working with overweight children. So you might want to inquire about engaging some of those programs there. I taught a class as an adjunct professor for Loma Linda University in the Philippines at IAS. And one of the primary emphases of the class was to do a health screening, a screening assessment. And I'd recommend you to do some sort of assessment in your area so that you know what your population really needs. Some of the folks, when they came through and they did an assessment of their village or their small town they came from, they realized that they had a greater need to prevent infant mortality than they had a need for stopping smoking. But I don't know anything about infant mortality, they said. And I said, well, find out. What can you do? It could be as simple as improved sanitation, improved clean water, or learning how to do simple IVs to prevent dehydration. The most common cause of death often is dehydration. And in these little babies, it's even more serious, dehydration. We almost lost our daughter when she was 8 or 9 years old. We were living at Hinsdale Hospital. She was vomiting and she was having diarrhea. And it's very difficult to keep any liquid down. So the pediatrician finally admitted her to the hospital and gave her IVs and suppositories for Tylenol and anti-nausea, Phenergan, and she was able to recover. 100 years ago, she probably would have died, you see. So sometimes we can't teach a program to meet the needs of the community because we don't know. Find out. And if the infant mortality is an issue, bring in some experts, learn. Present that, not just smoking, not just 8 weeks to wellness. But because we live in a industrialized nations, most of us, and we have access to all this fast food, access to cars and buses and we don't walk and we don't exercise, this is what we need. We need 8 weeks to wellness. Right? Okay. We're going to leave a few minutes early. This afternoon, I will be emphasizing stress, getting preventive health checks, and talking about how to rely on what sources of information should you read. If it's on the internet, it's okay. Is that correct? I'm going to give you some serious scientific, evidence-based hints as what to believe in what you read and hear and see and purchase. Okay? Any questions? Okay, I'm told we're due back here at 1:30.
This media was produced by Audioverse for the NAD Health Summit. If you would like to learn more about the NAD Health Summit, please visit www.nadhealthsummit.com. Or if you would like to listen to more free online sermons, please visit www.audioverse.org.